Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Justice League Spotlight episode. I'm also going to be talking about an Aquaman issue. So it's Justice League 12, and it's Aquaman 41, which is a tie-in to the story that's been going on in Justice League The Drowned Earth. So there's a little note at the bottom of the credits here for Aquaman 41, or actually, I'm sorry, it's Aquaman 42, that says the following story takes place between Justice League 11 and 12. So we saw at the end of Justice League 12 that Aquaman had literally been stabbed by Poseidon once Aquaman and Wonder Woman were able to locate Poseidon in the Graveyard of the Gods. So again, it's not 100% required that you read this particular issue to understand what's going on in Drowned Earth. There's enough in Justice League 12 that kind of picks up and fills in, but I do feel like you get more out of the story and a little better understanding of Aquaman and where he ends up at the end of the story if you do read this tie-in issue. So Aquaman 42 is from writer Dan Abnett. We have pencils by Lan Medina. Inks are by Vicente Fuentes. Colors by Gabe Eltab and letters by Steve Wands. Eduardo Pasica, Eber Ferreira, and Adriano Lucas handle one of the covers, and Ben Oliver does the variant cover. So, as I mentioned, this issue picks up where Justice League 11 ends, rather. So, we've got somewhat of a flashback at the beginning here that gives us an idea of what's been going on. It's a really cool image from Lan Medina, which is sort of a montage. And Aquaman is saying, "Great Poseidon, the triumvirate of sea gods, have returned to claim the earth. They've drowned the earth and taken away my powers," which basically sums up Justice League Aquaman Drowned Earth number one. And Aquaman says that he and Wonder Woman have come to Poseidon to see if his powers can be returned to him. And he needs Poseidon to show him how to kill these invaders, as Poseidon showed Arion once. And Poseidon's response is, "Well, Aquaman, if you think I'm your savior, then you're already dead." And he stabs him right through the heart with his trident. And that's a flashback of what happened at the last couple pages of Justice League 11. So now we see the consequences of that action. Wonder Woman is screaming, "Arthur, Arthur," and he seems to be drowning in blood. And as he passes out in this literally sea of blood that's flowing out of him, when he opens his eyes, he has someone else calling Arthur, and we see he's a young boy again, and he's on his father's fishing boat. And he's thinking to himself, "Well, I must have dozed off. It's so hot, so still." And then we see his father's actually there with him saying, "This is a test, Arthur, and you knew it was coming. All these years I've been taking you out to sea, I've been teaching you about the sea, and today we are going to find out what kind of mariner you really are, what kind of seafarer you really are. So show me, my boy. Tell me where we are. How does a mariner mark his positions? How do we figure out where we need to go?" And Arthur's response is, "Well, we look at the stars, but they're all so bright." And his father says, "Well, you just have to try." And Arthur says, "Well, there's Dagon and the Trench, and there's Arion's sash." So he's like, "Wait, this is the Dead Sea, the mythical sea, the one that's beyond the world, the last silence of the ocean." And his father says, "See, Arthur, you do know where you are." And Arthur wants to know, "Well, does that mean that we're dead? We're in this Dead Sea?" And his father's response is, "Well, I have been for a while." And Arthur doesn't want to hear that, right? Like, at the age that Aquaman is right now, his father was still alive. So he's like, "Dad, I don't want you to be dead." And his father's philosophical about it. And he says, "You know, people die. It's the cycle of life. It's the tides of life and death. You know, it's always moving. People die. It's all part of the part of the test." And Arthur gives his dad a hug and says, "But I don't want you to leave me." And his father says, "Well, I'll always be here. I'll be here. The sea let me come back just for a bit so I could sail with you." And Arthur says, "For the test?" And his father responds, "Yeah, but I'll always be here in this heart." Now, come on, show me what you can do. You've sailed farther out than any man should have, past the twilight stars, but you're not dead yet. So where do you want to go? Where is the place that you're called to? And Arthur's response is, but there's no wind. How do I get back? And his father says, that's right. We're stranded. And so again, it's the test. How do we survive? Do we wait for the wind to rise? And his father says, well, the wind always rises. The test is to be ready when the wind does rise. And as Arthur wants to know if his father will help him, and he said, well, it's time to grow up. It's time for you to take your journey. Be the seafarer I know you can. And Arthur says, well, the Dead Sea, that's where everybody goes at the end, the legend and the hero. So if you're here, that means you're a hero too. You're a legend too. And his father's response is, yeah, but not a hero like you. I'm just a drop in the ocean. I'm only here because I'm part of your myth. I had the honor of raising you, and that's what makes me a legend. But your story's not set. So the wind's rising. You have to be ready. And all of a sudden, there's thunder and lightning, and we see some beasts rise up out of the ocean. They're led by Ocean Master himself, and he's talking about how Aquaman's failed his family and his legacy. And there's always been too much of the surface in him, that he was never worthy to be the king of Atlantis. They didn't need him. They didn't need Aquaman. What they needed was an ocean master. So his father says, there's a storm coming. What will we do? What's the proper response? And Aquaman, as a young boy, says, well, I'll ride it out. I'll rig and ride it out. And Ocean Master says, you're going to run to the shore? You're always putting your blood before the seas. And Aquaman's nervous, and his father says, just ignore him. You can do it. So Aquaman says, I can't just ride out the storm, because it's going to use its wind to get me where I need to be. It's not just about riding out the storm, but about using something that's negative to turn it into a positive, right? Like, don't just ride out the storm. Use this turbulence, use this threat to get you where you need to go. So his father's proud of that choice, but wants to know the name. What's the name of the place that you need to reach? And Aquaman's still not sure. I don't know where I'm going. And Ocean Master chimes in with, he's just a boy. He knows nothing. And again, Aquaman's asking, how do I know? How do I know where I need to go? And his father's not going to just give him the answers. He's telling him, you need to tell me where you need to go. Never be afraid to ask the questions, but listen to your heart. And again, Aquaman's filled with doubt. He says, I don't know. And his father says, your brother's trying to break you of your confidence, but there's one thing he's right about. It's time to grow up. So we're really seeing that it's a big change for Aquaman in this issue and in this whole event, really. You know, we talked about it when we covered it on the new comic book Wednesday episode, about how what Scott Snyder does here leads in so well to Kelly Sue DeConnick's run and what she's trying to do in telling a new story of Aquaman, where it's not about the whole fish out of water, can't reconcile the surface with the Atlantean half of him and feeling like he doesn't belong in either one. It's time to go beyond that. It's time to evolve the character beyond that. And I think that's what they're getting at when they're saying it's time to grow up. But, you know, Arthur says, I don't know if I want to grow up, because if I grow up, I'm going to have to leave you. And his father again says, I've given you everything you need, and I want to see you grow into a man. It's time. And Arthur says, but Dad, I miss you so much. And his father says, I miss you too, son. And, you know, it's a great relationship, one of the great relationships in DC Comics, the historical relationships, Aquaman and his father. And I wish that we, at some point in the future, will get a series about how special that relationship is. Maybe it starts off with a few issues of his mother still there, and then you can go through the pain of his mother leaving and explore how that affects father and son and how it really strengthens their relationship. And I don't know, I would be interested in seeing that special relationship grow that they have, and give some more context to that. So once Aquaman's father says, I miss you too, son, at that moment, Aquaman makes his decision And we see as we turn the page, we get a great splash here of a grown-up Aquaman now in his traditional garb, no longer a boy, and his father saying, "That's my boy, keep moving. You'll know what you're looking for when you see it. In fact, I think you already know." And again, Aquaman's forced to look within himself, and he says, "You know, I've lost everything, my kingdom, my power, my life. I won't lose you too, not again." And once again, his father reminds him, "You'll never lose me. I'm always going to be a part of you. Now go." And we see one of the monstrous whales here that Ocean Master is leading crashes into the boat, capsizes it. And Arthur dives into the water, calling for his father, and his father again encouraging him, "Keep going, don't stop." And he's then, Aquaman is then confronted by Wrath, you know, one of the Atlantean old gods. And he's telling him, "Not this way, nothing for you here, no throne, no, you have no dominion over the water anymore, never a good enough king, just a scrap to be torn apart by bigger fish." And Aquaman is again, I can't fight this. I've got no powers. And his father again encouraging him, just the voice now. Part of the test is knowing when to fight, but when realizing a fight is not worth knowing. So again, it's Aquaman confronting his own doubts. You know, I'm not good enough to be the king of Atlantis. I'm not good enough to be a leader. I don't even have powers right now. A fight he's been raging his whole life within himself, trying to decide, am I good enough to be king of Atlantis? Should I let someone else rule and go and be on the surface? Which world do I belong in? He's fought that fight his whole life. It's a fight that he can't win. At some point, he's got to be willing to just accept, this is what I am. I can't choose between one world or the other. I'm both. Stop fighting it. It's not a fight worth fighting. It's not a fight worth knowing. And that's what his father's telling him. And you have to think, especially now that you don't even see his father on the page anymore, that this voice that Aquaman is hearing, in a way, is his himself, right? And maybe he's visualizing it as his father, but it's, if it is of his father in any way, it's of his father in the way that the part of his father that lives on in him. So I really think in a way it's Aquaman answering his own questions, because again, just like his father said, when Aquaman's wondering, where am I supposed to be going? And his father telling him, you know, think about it, you know where you're supposed to be going. So this voice goes on to say, you can always seek help when you need it. And again, Aquaman says, but I don't have my powers. How can I ask for help? So it's a new doubt that's been entered into the equation, right? He's always had doubts about where he belongs, surface or Atlantis. And now he's got even more doubt piled on top of that because his powers have been taken away. And the voice says, well, your aqua telepathy has been taken away, but your friends haven't forgot you. And we see Orm show up here and the voice telling him, trust your friends when all seems dark. And Orm leads him to land again. Looks pretty desolate, a reef somewhat, a lot of jagged rocks. And Aquaman says, you led me here and I'm grateful for it, but where is here? Is this the place I've been looking for? And Orm swims off. He doesn't answer. And again, the voice of his father, that's also the voice of Aquaman himself saying, this isn't it, Arthur. It's just a place where you left things that are precious to you. And there will always be those who try to steal those precious things. And he sees some marauders who are trying to smash open a chest. And one of them is carrying Aquaman's trident, and they confront him saying, who are you supposed to be, fish boy? Go back to the sea. And Aquaman attacks them and says, that trident is mine, and is able to overcome them and defeat them pretty easily. And then tells them, leave this place and tell every scavenger who thinks the sea belongs to them. And before he can finish the sentence, we see Black Manta show up. And he's much larger than normal, much larger than Aquaman. And he interrupts Aquaman to say, tell them what, Aquaman? That you'll punish them? And he fires his energy beams at Aquaman. And again, the voice saying, Arthur, remember, doom is always close. It's always hiding in the shadows. It's waiting to strike. And it often comes in the form of your greatest regrets. So again, the idea that Aquaman can't overcome his own inner demons, and it's held him back for so long. and you know, living in the past, living with regret, the death of his son, not being able to choose between Atlantis and the surface world, not being a good enough king when he was ruler. And the voice says, you know, there's things you'll wish you'd done differently, things you'd wish you'd never done at all, but you're going to make mistakes and you've got to learn to live with them. You've got a temper like your mother's. And if you're going to act on impulse, you're going to hate yourself after. You've got to be stronger than the hate. You've got to remember that what is stronger than the hate is love. And at that moment, he sees Mira, and she's a great metaphor for this, right? Because it's all about forgiveness. In love, there is forgiveness. Mira, in her love, Aquaman can find a way to forgive himself and know that there are still good things in his life. Plus, Mira herself is somewhat an image of forgiveness in that she has forgiven Atlantis, come to be its ruler, in fact, when she's from the, you know, the Atlantean penal colony of Zabel, and had hatred for Atlantis for so long and carried a grudge because of what the Atlanteans had done to the people of Zabel. So the voice goes on to say, love can show you how to be better, how to make amends, and it'll show you the future that is still possible. So as Mira hands him his trident, he uses it to basically slice this image, this illusion of this giant black manta in half. As the voice tells him, the final thing that love does is it reminds you to fight for it. Fight for forgiveness, fight for peace, fight for the ability to be better and to make amends. And so now that Aquaman has destroyed this vision of Black Manta, it's laying there in pieces on the ground. He says, there's nothing here. Everything is sinking away. It's falling away. And again, the voice of his father, the voice of himself, his inner voice encouraging him, saying, you know, life can feel sometimes like everything's falling away. But there's always one thing left that you can't lose. No matter what happens, you have to remember things that would break any other man, they won't break you, because you'll always have what makes you, you. And the place that you've been trying to reach, it can't be found on any map or any sea chart. And as the seas start to calm, he sees his father on the fishing boat once again, asking if he's there. He says, I'm here, Dad. And so again, it's this part of his father that's within himself that's saying and finally confronting him and challenging him to be better. Just like Mira's love challenges Aquaman to be better, his father's love is challenging him to be better and saying, you know that what that place is called now, don't you? And Aquaman says, yes, it's called hope. And I personally have never thought of Aquaman as a character that embodies hope. To me, Wonder Woman somewhat, certainly Superman is the big one. Aquaman has at times been a bright character. At times he's been a dark character. But in all that time, even in his brightness, I've never thought of him as a character that has hope, because he's always been wrapped around that question, that dilemma, where do I belong? He's never one that has inspired hope. And that's why I love what Scott Snyder is doing here. I love what it seems like Kelly Sue DeConnick is about to do. I love what Dan Abnett has done. And I love that he's been able to transition what started out as a very political book to a very personal book, now to a book where he's leaving Aquaman in a place where he's never been before, for Kelly Sue DeConnick to pick up the pieces and go forward. It's very powerful. It's very inspiring. And this issue really leads into very well the, I'll call it a transitional issue that's Justice League 12, but then into the conclusion of the Drowned Earth storyline, which really is all about hope. It's impressive in its scope of how much hope, and forgive the inadvertent rhyme there, that Scott Snyder and the rest of the creative team have infused in that finale. And I'll be talking about that on the next spotlight, the finale of it, which I thought was just incredible. So the place that Aquaman has always needed to get to be a symbol of hope. And I love the idea of a character that's been around as long as Aquaman getting sort of a new aspect to him as a character. I love that he's being evolved in this way. So the place that Arthur is now, the place he's always meant to be, is this place called Hope. And as Aquaman says that and his eyes start to glow blue with perhaps the emotional spectrum of hope, we get this voice from off panel saying, "Stay your hand a moment. I did not act with the intent to hurt Aquaman." As we're back, we are seeing him confront Poseidon as he punches Poseidon, and Poseidon says, I was trying to help you. And as Poseidon is laying there, Wonder Woman's asking Arthur if he's okay. And Arthur's response is, "If pain is help in this twisted realm, then let me return the favor." And then we get the blurb here at the bottom. Drowned Earth concludes in Justice League number 12 and Aquaman Justice League Drowned Earth number 1. Then a new era begins in Aquaman 43, which is the first issue of the Kelly Sue DeConnick run, which I'm really, really excited for. I think the only way that I could be more excited for it is if Aquaman was in that blue costume, that awesome blue costume from his miniseries in the mid 80s, and the fact that he is Hope. Like, if he ever, I know Kelly, this is not what Kelly Sue is going to do, or I don't think so anyway. She's going to concentrate on exploring new aspects of Aquaman and get away from that fish out of water aspect of him. But Hope, right? An aspect of Aquaman we've never seen before. That's the Blue Lanterns. That's the blue of the emotional spectrum. And I'm just going to say that if Aquaman ever does get a Blue Lantern ring, I want his blue costume, his Blue Lantern costume, to be that blue costume from the mid-80s, because it's awesome and it would look even better with a Blue Lantern symbol in the front of it. So it's a great issue of Aquaman. I think it, again, really sets up Kelly Sue DeConnick's run. It really ties in and gives a little glimpse of what we can expect in the conclusion of Drowned Earth, which at the time I read Aquaman 41, did not realize that until I did read the conclusion, and again was so impressed with the aspect of hope and the feeling of hope that Scott Snyder was able to bring to Aquaman in the conclusion of that story. So let me go ahead quickly and talk about Justice League 12, that issue, which is, again, kind of a transitional issue that bridges the gap between Justice League 11 and the follow-up events of Aquaman 42 into the conclusion in Aquaman Justice League. So Justice League 12 is written by James Tynan IV. We have art by both Fraser Irving and Bruno Redondo. We have Irving and Sonny Goh on colors, Tom Napolitano on letters. A couple covers, Jorge Jimenez and Alejandro Sanchez do the normal cover, and then we have a variant by Lucio Perillo. So this issue picks up with a flashback. We're in the Gulf of Mexico then. It's a hurricane, and there's a Trawler 12, which is actually the ship or the boat of Black Manta's father. And he's talking about wanting to salvage this treasure that they were able to find. Unfortunately, the hurricane has caused the wreck to move, and it's no longer in a place where they are able to, or they're allowed to go down and find this treasure. And Black Manta's father is very disappointed. He says, "The hurricane pulled the wreck across a line." He's like, "I've dropped out farther than that before. I let me just go down there and, you know, we can fudge the numbers and it's fine." And the organization he works for says, "No, you'll bring the feds down on our whole organization. You can't do that." And his father, very angry, saying, "You know how much the contents of that ship are worth? I'm not handing it over to the government just because it moved 100 yards. This is ridiculous. I got here before the hurricane, and now that the hurricane's here, it moved, but I still have time." Meanwhile, Black Manta is looking at his gear, and his father's yelling at him to stay away from it. And again, the organization telling him that he shouldn't have taken his son out there. And if he does the salvage without the go-ahead, he'll turn Black Manta's father into Child Protective Services. And Black Manta hears his father scream and smash the receiver. And he's looking down into the water and thinking about how there's treasure down there, enough for them to live well the rest of their lives. and he doesn't understand, because it seems like all the ocean does is take. It takes lives, it takes ships, and this hurricane has taken away what both father and son had sacrificed everything to reach. And why couldn't they just go? Why couldn't they just go and take it back? And now we're in the tomb of Arion, and the time is now, and Aquaman is saying that it would be better if people understood, if they could feel like Black Manta feels now, and they could feel the web of life that binds not just sea life, but all life. And Aquaman's power, he thought he understood what it was. He thought he saw it as a glint in the inky blackness of the ocean. And he always wanted it for himself. But now that he has it, wielding it is something that he never expected it to be. And these beings use people, the triumvirate transform these, the people of Earth into these monsters. And now that they are monsters of the sea, Black Manta is able to use this power that formerly belonged to Aquaman, to turn these people into extensions of his will. And what they are now is just the doom of, and again, Legion of Doom, the doom of Superman and Mira and Flash, the only three heroes left that are trying to turn back the sea gods and turn back the invasion. So meanwhile, Commander Drogue is telling Black Manta, okay, stop playing with them and just end it already. You know, we've closed the door on any possibility of these heroes retrieving the Tear of Extinction. So stop screwing around and end it. And meanwhile, Mira is holding back the waters that will turn Superman and herself into these sea monsters. We know Flash is already infected, and he's using as much of the Speed Force as he can to try to hold back the infection. And Mira is saying, I can keep the infected water from touching us, but I can't keep these creatures out, so keep fighting. And meanwhile, Flash is saying, I don't know how much longer I can keep this affection off. And if I turn, you know, you're going to have to stop me. And Mira says the conch was the centerpiece of Arion's crown, and it was supposed to help us fight these creatures, but there's nothing here. And we know that's because Black Manta and Cheetah had previously come and taken the Tear of Extinction. And in fact, on the next page, we see that the Legion of Doom has invaded the Hall of Justice, and they're about to take the totality for themselves. And Luther and Cheetah are talking about the possible potential that the totality has. And the reason that the Justice League is losing the battle is because they were too afraid of the totality. They're too afraid of trying to break it open and use the power of it. And that's why they're losing the war with the sea gods. So Luther then asks Cheetah if she has it. And Cheetah says, I do, but this goes against every instinct. We're going to destroy a relic like this, one with such power. Why not take the power for ourselves, right? We may need the power of the Graveyard of Gods. And rather than destroying it, we should use it for ourselves. But if Diana really is in the Graveyard of Gods, the gods, then for that, I'll be willing to break a principle or two and destroy this key to the graveyard. So meanwhile, the other three members of the Legion of Doom, Sinestro, Gorilla Grodd, and Joker, say we've lost the trace. They were following Batman through the Hall of Justice. And Lex is like, I don't care if he's Batman in a wheelchair. For God's sakes, find him and kill him. Are you guys, three of you, and you can't handle Batman in a wheelchair? And the Joker's thinking back, well, there was this one time I had an entire busload of nuns. And Grodd's like, if I got to listen to this guy's depravity one more time, someone's going to have to put me out of my misery. And a voice from off panel says, yeah, I can do that. And we see that Batman's managed to make it into some Kryptonian armor. And the Joker's like, oh, man, I really do love this part. And Sinestro says, Luther, we have him. But really, Batman's like, I'm right over here if you think you have me. And what we'll have here is the spot in the Hall of Justice where we can tell everybody how Batman kicked the asses of the Legion of Doom without using his arms or legs. On the next page, now we're in the Bruno Redondo art, which is a much more watercolor, much more impressionist. And it's Aquaman and Wonder Woman fighting against Poseidon. Wonder Woman now attacking him, saying, "How dare you? Can't you feel what has become of our ocean? Can't you feel the echoes of your actions? And Arthur came here for help and you strike him down. You know, I told Arthur that my gods could be petty and cruel, but they don't stand up to what you just did." And Poseidon shoves her back and says, "Enough. I think you'll find if you stay your hand for a moment that I didn't act with an intent to hurt Aquaman. I was trying to help him." And again, Aquaman says, just like he did at the end of Aquaman 42, "Well, if pain is help in this twisted realm, then let me return the favor." And he punches Poseidon in the face and he says, "The earth has been drowned at the hands of these powerful ocean lords, gods that were cast down in this very graveyard eons ago." And Poseidon says, "Yes, Drogue, Titan, Gaul, I remember." And Arthur says, "Yes, again, you once stood side by side with the great hero of Atlantis. You fought back, and we need you. We need your help." And Poseidon has a confession to make, and he says, "Well, there's not much time. That damn cheetah woman who trapped me here, she's going to destroy this entire realm in moments by destroying the key. And I wish that I can enhance your power and the life force that you use when you use your trident, but the gods have stripped away your power and your connection, and they've given it to the traitor Manta. And so the power is the key itself. It's what has brought on their rage, and it's what brought them to our world in the first place. But they're not our enemies, as you understand." And he starts talking about the fact that Arianne was a great sorcerer and adventurer, and he wanted Atlantis as a seafaring nation to be a jewel and to be friend to the world, and the embodiment of that dream was Arion himself. And Poseidon admired him and his city, and he trusted him and entrusted him with a power that allowed life to flourish on Earth in all the seas and connect the life of the sea to all the other life on Earth. And Poseidon was the one who told Arion there are other worlds in the night sky that didn't have that power, that didn't have that connection of life, and that's what made us special and unique. And Arion, ever the positive hero, ever the sorcerer of good intentions, ever the embodiment of life, felt that he should share that power with the universe, make all the oceans of the galaxy share in the potential, allow them to share in the potential. And so Arion imbued the power, some of the power that Poseidon had shared with him into this conch shell, took the power of the trident, and was going to use it as a tool to harness the life force and broadcast it, broadcast his dream of life and connection across the stars. And that's why he built the Towers of Atlantis, with the idea that one day they might launch and see the oceans of the galaxy and reach out. And the Triumvirate, they heard this call where they were from, in the worlds that they were from, the dark multiverse where life struggled. And they were eager for some of the power that was offered. They were eager for this power of life to help continue to sustain the life of their oceans. Not that they wanted to come and conquer, but that they wanted to share. And at that moment, Poseidon faltered. He began to fear them. He worried that this triumvirate would come and not share the gift of life, but take it all for themselves. They would come as usurpers and come and take what was rightfully Poseidon's, right? So Poseidon chose to share it with Arion, but his desire to share didn't go beyond that. He didn't have enough good in him. Even as a god, he didn't have enough good and enough faith in him. And so, because of this, Poseidon poisoned Arion's mind. He showed him the possibility of this terrible power that these gods might wield, this triumvirate of sea gods might wield. So rather than looking out at these sea gods, looking at this event of sharing this power and seeing the best in these other beings, Poseidon chose to see the worst. He chose to look at it as the glass is half empty. And because he was so inextricably linked with Arion, rather. He poisoned Arion's mind. And what Arion did in that moment was he used his sorcery and his technology to invert a small piece of the power to create a droplet of death. And that droplet of death became a tear of pure extinction. And that's what Manta and Cheetah stole. And Arion took the conch, which was meant to carry life, and instead he filled it with death. And the gods that were once welcomed, and this call that was once a welcoming call toward the greater dream of sharing this life and helping these sea gods of the universe sustain life on their planets. Instead, that call became a terrifying shriek of destruction. And when Arion used the power of this tear of extinction, he cast those gods into the graveyard of gods for all time. And what's worse is at that moment, that's when the great mage of Atlantis died. I don't think that Arion, being that he was such a champion of life, such a positive force, could really handle what he had done. In a way, it broke his heart. And so for generations, the myth that came from the encounter fueled the Atlantean isolationism and the utter perversion of everything Arion truly stood for. So again, a broken heart because it was against Arion's very nature because of what Poseidon did. And not only did he doom Arion to death, he took away the hope that Atlantis had once embodied and the desire for them to be a part of the world and to share life. It was such a place that was full of life, and instead became a place where everyone was filled with fear that anyone from the outside was coming with ill intentions, when in fact that was the exact opposite of what actually happened. I mean, when you think about it, it's awful what Poseidon did. And so as Poseidon continues to give his confession to Aquaman, he says, "Do you understand? I was the god of the ocean. I was tempest, fury of the sea. And with my jealousness and because I was temperamental, I did what I did and I knew my actions were wrong. I could never live up to the dream that I admired so much in Atlantis and in Arion himself. And in failing to do so, I crushed that dream in its infancy. And I took three young, hopeful sea gods and I cast them into necrotic rot. They were in the graveyard of gods. I turned them into these somewhat evil beings that they are now." And Aquaman, you can see the look on his face. He's disappointed. He's saddened. And he says, "Well, there must be something we can do. These sea gods were coming to Earth in good faith. Isn't there anything we can do to make them see the light?" And Poseidon says, "I don't think you can comprehend what the graveyard is like for a deity. Right, the toll it's already taken on me in mere days is unimaginable, and they were here for centuries. And so you maybe could have been the perfect weapon because you're both of land and sea. You are the joining of the life of the sea and the life of the surface. But unfortunately, your power was taken from you. And, you know, I thought I might be able to imbue you with a powerful enough strain of life force, just as I imbued Arion with death. But that path is closed, and now we'll all meet our end soon." So meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, we see that Luther uses the doorknob, which has the power to destroy the key to the graveyard of gods. And as the key is destroyed, Batman shows up with Sinestro and Grodd, Joker in hand, saying, "Drop the damn doorknob and step away from the totality." Batman has indeed managed to defeat those three. And Luther's response is, "Ah, I'm flattered that you deemed that old prototype of mine worth keeping. But lest you forget the cold hard truth of your situation, I just cracked the hull of the Justice League, and the infected are going to be coming in soon. And that old suit that you're in is going to be your coffin. And I promise I'll brag about that in the coming years." So he then teleports the Justice or the League of Legion of Doom away. As back at the tomb of Arion, Superman is saying, "I think this is the end. There's more coming, and I don't think we can hold them off." And Flash says, "I didn't really picture drowning in the middle of the desert as the way I would go, but I guess that's life, right? And Mira's talking about how she's weakening and doesn't know if she's going to be able to hold the water at bay any longer. But she's starting to sense something else in the tomb, a water that's unlike all the rest. It's stagnant and powerful. It's in Arion's bones. And it's the weapon Ocean Master told her about. It's the tear of extinction. So perhaps what Cheetah and Black Manta found wasn't all of the tear. And she's able to withdraw this blade formed from the fresh water using the conch as her hilt and forge a blade. And Drog says, no, Manta, you swore the drop was removed from this place. How could you have left any of it here? And then Drog calls for the Kraken Flood to end this. But now that Mira is armed with the Tear of Extinction that has been forged with the Conch of Life, she's able to repel Drog. And Flash says, wow, Mira's killed it. The floodwaters are retreating. The creature's with it. Superman, hold your ground. We can win. So Flash and Superman are filled with hope once again. There's that word. Thinking that maybe perhaps they can win. And then Mira goes on to attack Drog with the hilt. And Drog says, damn you. They have the power to kill us. We cannot face them directly. We must retreat. Manta doesn't want to hear that. He's like, retreat? What are you talking about? We've got him cornered right here. I'll have control of Flash in mere minutes. There's no way we can run. And Drog says, it's not a matter that's up for discussion. Remember your place. And he teleports them away. And Mira tells Superman and Flash, the Sword of Water, I can feel the power that rages through it. It's death incarnate, rotten and cruel. It's made its mark. And Flash says, maybe we can fight back. Maybe we can turn the tide. Meanwhile, back in the Graveyard of Gods, Poseidon is telling Aquaman and Wonder Woman, do you feel that? Cheetah has done her cruel deed. We're dead already. And Aquaman says, I refuse to accept that. There's got to be a way. There must be a way to get out of here. We have a key to this place as well. We're not dead yet, and there's got to be a way to make this right. And Poseidon says, well, perhaps there is a way. The three of them run to the skiff that Aquaman and Wonder Woman rode into the Graveyard of Gods. Poseidon passes his trident to Aquaman and says, take this. It was meant to turn the oceans of the universe into a cradle of life. It can't be that any longer. But perhaps you can use it as a weapon, as Arion did long ago. Power it with the Tear of Extinction, hidden in the old king's bones. Make this trident rich with death. And when this place is destroyed, you can use this trident to kill the gods and kill the triumvirate of gods, and they'll be erased from existence because there won't be a graveyard of gods to go back to. Do it with the somber heart, and with the last bit of my power, I will drive you and Wonder Woman from this place. I will fill your sails, and hopefully my handiwork, which turned hopeful beings into relentless villains, shows that there's no hope now, but hopefully with the trident, you'll be able to defeat them. The dream of Arion is dead, but the path of victory is to kill them. So go. And he uses his power to send Wonder Woman and Aquaman from the Graveyard of Gods as the graveyard itself disintegrates and we see Poseidon fade into nothing. And Aquaman is telling Wonder Woman, he's gone, it's all gone. Set sail for home because we need to end this whole sorry affair. Meanwhile, back at the Blood Reef, Drog is filling in Commander Tide and the Admiral, saying that the Atlantean and the Amazon have escaped the graveyard and they're en route to Earth, and our enemies now carry both life and death. Aquaman's got the life embodied in the trident. Mira's got the Tear of Extinction embodied in the conch sword, and perhaps they may need the Death Kraken in order to win this fight. And Black Man is like, enough of this self-pity and nonsense. You guys need to fight back. You need to up your game and bring out the heavy weapons. It is time for the Death Kraken. And the gods say, I fear this path, but what choice do we have? Perhaps Black Manta is right. And Black Manta says, oh, please, you have to let me say it. Release the Death Kraken. And on the final page, we get a blurb to be concluded in Aquaman Justice League Drown Earth number one. So when we covered this issue on New Comics Wednesday, Manny did point out he didn't care much for the incongruent art. The Irving Fraser art is pretty classic comic book art, but the Bruno Redondo art is very impressionistic. And the proportions on arms and legs and heads and necks at various times gets a little out of whack. I do like the feel and the tone that it gives, because it does feel very mystical. But I do agree with Manny in that it's not the best art, and it does feel strange. These two art styles are very, very different. But I do love how this issue sets up the conclusion, because again, it's somewhat of a transitional issue. There's a little bit there to explore in thinking about what Poseidon did, his choice, his decision, his fear of what Arion did by calling the sea gods down to Earth and then not being able to have faith that they would come with the best of intentions, but rather that jealousy, that temperamentalness. And I guess it makes sense. You know, he said it himself, "I'm the god of the sea. I can be filled with rage. I can be filled with jealousy. I am temperamental." You know, just like the sea can be unpredictable when it comes to weather. So it makes sense that way, but it's also a little strange because you so often think of gods as benevolent, right? But, you know, as Wonder Woman herself says at the beginning of this issue when she attacks Poseidon, that she had told Arthur previously as you know, she's always known gods to be petty and jealous, at least the gods of Mount Olympus. So she's not particularly surprised, even though what Poseidon has done has gone so far beyond anything that any of the gods that she knew about had done in the past. So again, a really great transitional issue. I do kind of wish the art was a little more consistent. Would have been interesting to see, like, if Francis Manapul had drawn this whole issue, or Howard Porter, or Scott Gadlewski, one of the three artists that did the finale. Because I don't know how well this is going to read in trade, especially if the trade has the tie-in issues from, like, Titans and Aquaman and such. Because, again, a lot of different art styles. And this one's probably the most different of all, this Bruno Redondo art. So, again, it's not bad art per se, but it needs to be in the right book. And the fact that it's teamed up with this other artist, Irving Fraser, handling the Legion of Doom's invasion of the Hall of Justice, it just feels a little incongruent. As far as that aspect of the book, the Justice League, the invasion of the Hall of Justice, rather, that's fun. That's really great. Aquaman, or Batman, rather, does have a couple of great moments when he's in the Kryptonian-inspired armor, the prototype from that Lex had built. Kind of think of it as a hybrid of Kryptonian armor and Lex's battle armor, like the one that he currently wears. And it's great that Batman was able to get to that. And you know, even though it happens off panel, he defeats Grodd, he defeats Joker, he defeats Sinestro. All that's really fun, but ultimately it's futile, right? Because Luthor is able to escape with all members of the Legion of Doom and take the totality with them. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of consequences of that going forward. But again, I don't know what Batman could have done differently. It shows Batman's resiliency, but it shows that Luthor still has the foreknowledge and understands what's going on with the totality and what's going on with these other forces much more so than the rest of the Justice League. He's still a few steps ahead of them. And hopefully with what Martian Manhunter and Hawkgirl and Jon Stewart are able to find at Thanagar Prime will help to kind of even the scales a little bit, kind of even up the sides with getting the Justice League the knowledge that they need and helping them understand a little better so they can kind of catch up so they're not so far behind Lex and what his plans are. So I've said it before. I've said it on Twitter. What Scott Snyder, James Tynan, and Joshua Williamson have been doing on Justice League feels so central to the DC Universe, which I think was their goal all along. And it's been an incredible story. I know there's a lot more coming. Some big event in January is going to spur the story and the titles to the next level for something big that's going to happen in the spring. I can't wait to find out what it is. I love the way Scott Snyder is taking different members of the Justice League and shining the spotlight on them in these particular arcs. Clearly, this one was a very Aquaman-centric, Wonder Woman a little less so. But she did get a lot of time in the Witching Hour story from James Tynan. So again, it's not only is it spotlighting them, but in Aquaman's case, we're really looking at his evolution as a character. And for someone who has been around for so long to finally make a change and have him grow and evolve, I think is a really, really great thing. I mean, there could be an argument made that Peter David really shook up his status quo when he had his hand removed and replaced with the harpoon and the stories he told. And those were really great and fun stories. But they were a little of its time, you know, happened in the 90s, dark and gritty, and, you know, Aquaman needed to be angry too and bearded, I suppose. So, again, those were good stories. They were of his time, and I love that Kelly Sue DeConnick is going to be take it in a completely different direction, apparently, with what Scott Snyder has set up here, and that's with Aquaman as a symbol of hope. And I really like that that idea. So that's going to do it for this episode. Hope you guys liked my breakdown of these two issues. Only one issue to spotlight remaining for Drowned Earth, which I'll cover next Friday. And once again, want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, be sure to check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.